I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How are you guys?
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
Yay.
Good. You sound good.
Thanks. Can you hear me okay? There's no background noise.
Where are you?
In our studio.
Okay.
Really the only place I can escape to.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jamie. And this is Clever. Today on the show, we've got Seth Grizzle of the design studio Gray Pants. He's a young architect and product designer with a lot of success under his belt already, including co-founding an international lighting brand, working with clients like BMW and Airbnb, being featured in Dwell magazine, and he and his team they're basically setting the design world on fire.
Back in design school, Seth met his friend and future partner in Gray Pants, Jonathan Junker. Obviously, they couldn't name their studio Junker and Grizzle. You'll hear why they named it Gray Pants when we talk to Seth. But before we talk to Seth, we want to take a few minutes to thank you guys. This is our last episode of 2016, and while we can all agree that it's been a pretty gnarly year for a lot of people, we are super thrilled to have launched this podcast in May and put out 20 episodes already. We've had a lot of great moments in those 20 episodes, so Jamie, let's take a few minutes to reminisce, shall we?
Yes. Every time I listen back to the podcast as we're doing the editing process, there are things that I miss during the actual interview, and they're like these great inspirational nuggets, and I'm like, whoa, I don't remember them saying that. That's awesome. And I always feel inspired when I listen to them. And one of the things I really loved was when we talked to Brendan Ravenhill, which was, I think, episode 4. He takes some time for him and his team every week for them to be creative. They do a lot of their making. And then I believe it was on Fridays, they take a little bit of a break to think and ideate and all of that and be creative. So he said that there's this sense of accomplishment when you've done all your work and you can be creative. Like you ate all your vegetables and now you get to have dessert. And I love that analogy.
I love that analogy too. And it's perfect because he talked so much in that episode about a sense of play being important to creativity. Mm-hmm. And that encapsulates it because it makes you feel like a kid again, right? If you have to eat your vegetables before you can have dessert, it's a very childlike thing, which mm-hmm. already gets you in the mindset of play.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of kids, remember when Robert Bruner of Ammunition, who's basically the creative genius behind Beats by Dre headphones, was talking about like whether his kids thought he was cool or not? And he said what sealed the deal was when he brought home an Instagram pic of him in a Dre and Diddy sandwich. Right.
I think he said something like either it made me super cool or it made Dre and Diddy kind of dorky.
Right.
That was actually a really great episode. And in case you missed it, it was episode number 8.
Yes. And that pic is on our show notes at cleverpodcast.com. Yes.
Go check it out. One of my favorite moments, which was like a duh moment for I think me and you, was when we were talking with David Trubridge, which was just our most recent episode, number 19, and he convinced us that he and his family had been eaten by a whale when they were at sea sailing around the world. And we were like, really? We want to know the story. And then we were obviously being
so gullible.
He was pulling a fast one on us.
No, he was throwing it out as a joke. And you and I didn't get it at all. We were like, holy shit, how'd you get out of the whale?
Right. What did you do? What kind of plan did you devise to escape?
Total like suburban white girls, right?
Totally. That was hilarious.
Remember R.I.P. Prince? He died this year in 2016. It broke my heart, mm-hmm. but it was actually really moving and meaningful to hear Genevieve Gorder retell her story when she was young. She worked at Glam Slam in Minneapolis mm-hmm. for Prince.
Yeah, I know. And we were super jealous.
I know. I'm so jealous. But so many of our guests have such great histories, such great backstories.
Yeah. No, I loved talking to her. That was like our second episode.
Mm-hmm. Episode number two.
Yeah, that was a good one. I also liked that she talked about playlists and music being important in interior design.
I do too. I think it's so important to create a sense of atmosphere, a sense of place, and mm-hmm. to think about space, texture, feel, all these intangible things, not just style, color, palette, and stuff mm-hmm. like that. You know, you really got to conceive of how somebody might feel in the place in order to create atmosphere.
Oh, speaking of feelings, I think that one of our most inspiring episodes was by far Terry Crews. And he said to us, which like blew our minds, that when you feel scared, you're not really scared. You're just excited because your body is reacting the same way
that's
it would react
right.
to being scared, but you're not scared. You're excited. And that like blew our minds.
The physiological response to fear and excitement are exactly the same. Like your heart races, your temperature. I don't even remember all the symptoms. Yeah. Whenever you think you're afraid, just remind yourself you're actually excited.
Yeah. I actually do that now. Like I think, okay, am I really scared of this or am I just excited and anticipating it?
It totally changes how I proceed.
Mm-hmm.
I love Terry Crews. Thank you for that. It's totally helped me in my life.
That episode was great. That was episode number 7.
You know, David Weeks, he had something to say about that quiet confidence you have when you're sort of venturing forth into uncharted territory. You know, you're charting a new path for yourself and there's not really any frame of reference or recipe to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, I don't know, I just always had the confidence that it would either work or I'd figure out how to make it work.
Yeah, he said, I never once thought it wasn't going to work out. I was always like, I'll figure it out. And if it doesn't work, I'll modify it. And that's such a great go with the flow attitude. And I am not like that at all. I'm like a control freak. So when I heard him say that, and we've actually had a couple of guests say that they kind of just go with the flow, that gave me a little bit more confidence to know that like I can figure it out. Nothing terrible is going to happen that I can't manage.
Yeah, I tend to bring up David Weeks whenever I get in that sort of pre-planning, belaboring, I have a tendency to sort of over plan things and get too meticulous because I'm hesitating to start because I don't know what's going to happen. And David Weeks's confidence, he's just cruising that vessel directly into those uncharted territories and just trusting the winds and or his ability to work with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And I dig it.
Yeah, I think that's also what David Trubridge was talking about when he said, like, one of the great rules of the sea is that you just kind of go with the flow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what Terry Crews was talking about when he's like, you got to
ride the log. That's right. That's right.
Oh my gosh, so many good ones. I can't let this end without remembering some of Tanya Aguiniga's fantastic stories from her childhood.
I know. And what a crazy childhood she had going back and forth, crossing the border every single day with her family.
I know. And then also she got chased by a bull.
Oh my gosh. They had that pet eagle in the house that they were building. And then they gave it like the master bedroom while the house was being built. And that's where the eagle lived.
And her dad would just like throw steaks in the room.
Right. Oh my gosh. That was
She's such a good character.
Episode. Oh, I think that was episode 13. Oh, David Weeks was episode 12 and then Tanya was 13.
Yes. Yeah, so if you guys missed it, go back and listen.
I also really love Jonathan Adler when he said that he like heard somebody on the phone at his store who said, oh, I'm at Jonathan Adler and I'm shopping. And then he realized he was not just a person or a name. He became a brand. I thought that was really, really interesting.
He's like, whoa, I'm a thing now.
Right.
I'm not just a guy anymore.
Yeah. There was a lot of good nuggets in that conversation. He also talked about, you know, that people project ideas on the maker, like people who make things, people who craft product or, you know, beautiful objects. And he said, when people think about artisans, they project a sort of idea purity onto the maker of things. And for Jonathan, it was ironic because when he stopped making everything himself, that enabled him to become infinitely more creative because he was stepping back from the production process and he was able to spend time on being more creative.
That's a really great episode, too. So those are some of our favorite moments. We've been asking you guys to share your favorite moments on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Clever Podcast. Now let's talk to Seth Brizzle.
My name is Seth Grizzle. I am with Gray Pants in Seattle, Washington, and we are a conceptual design studio focusing on lighting, architecture, and custom installations. And the reason we're doing it is because we love to do it.
Wonderful.
We kind of like to start at the beginning. We like to know the backstory. So where are you from?
I am from Akron, Ohio, just outside of a cornfield.
What was your childhood like? What's your family dynamic?
It's pretty much the white picket fence Americana lifestyle. I'm son of a preacher. My mom's a school teacher. Pretty simple upbringing. Just a really kind of tiny Midwestern town.
It sounds super wholesome, but sometimes there's usually some torture lurking beneath the wholesomeness. Did you have any thoughts of rebelling, or were you just a pretty well-adjusted kid?
Believe it or not, I was actually a pretty good kid, if I may say so myself. I think my parents would back that up. My rebellion was more to leave, I think, eventually.
Wanderlust.
Yeah, find the bigger city.
Gotcha. Did you grow up like tinkering or playing with Legos or making stuff with your dad? Where did this sort of passion for architecture and design start in you?
I'm very different than my family. I have a sister. She's 16 months older than I am. We are completely different people. She is an accountant and is very logical in process. And I'm sort of the crazy creative one that they didn't really understand, perhaps.
Oh, nonlinear thinker, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can relate to that. You're like an alien in your own home.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Legos were my toy of choice by far. That, and there was all these things called Kinects as well, which was another kind of construction toy. Those were my jam back in the day. And both of my grandfathers were welders and kind of craftsmen. Kind of tinkering and working on stuff.
And were they close by in Akron, Ohio?
They were. My family all was within a 5-mile radius, pretty much. So it was a really kind of tight-knit, close family. And I spent tons of time with them. And my dad's father had a big, huge red barn in the back with all sorts of tools. And if something was broken, you fixed it. And I just spent a lot of time over there just tinkering around with him.
At some point, you had to flap your wings and fly away from there. Did you figure out you wanted to study architecture and design right away, or did you have a few detours along the route?
When I was in junior high is when I really got interested in architecture, and it was through an art teacher. Mm. And my art teacher was probably the most influential person early on in my life to help guide me and make those decisions and show me that there were other possibilities out there in the world. And he really, I guess you could say, put a key to my brain and turned it and unleashed the beast.
Oh, that's cool. So what kind of art were you making in this art class? Was it more like a shop class or was it fine art?
I went to two different high schools eventually. So what happened was the first one I had gone to, I went through junior high there and I went through my freshman and sophomore year, and it was more fine art. And I learned about all the different periods of art and isms, and we kind of did a lot of painting and sculpture and still lifes and figure drawing. So it was more of a fine arts background that way. And then when I transferred high schools, it was a Mennonite high school, which was in the middle of an Amish town. That was more woodworking and craft-based. So I had a shop class there, and we had all sorts of, you know, beautiful woodworking equipment, and I learned a completely new skill set.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Let's just give a high five there to art teachers. A lot of art classes and shop classes are disappearing from public education, and I think that's a real tragedy.
Same here.
I'm really glad that you are giving a voice to how it influenced you, and that you had the fine art background juxtaposed with the hands-on making craft background. I think it's really nice that you got exposed to both of those disciplines while you were still in your developmental stage.
Yeah, I was super lucky. Very, very fortunate. And that's, I think, speaks to the wholesome Midwestern background as well.
What was the reason why you moved high schools? Did your family move to a new town?
My dad ended up switching churches. So okay. It was kind of linked within.
What was it like going to that kind of school?
I was excited. I was more, truthfully, at that stage in my life, I was a basketball player, and I grew up in the hometown of LeBron James, so he kind of stole the show, so to speak. He was an amazing player, but basketball was my thing, and basketball and art, pretty much. I was a pretty shy kid growing up, and it helped me, I think, crack out of my shell a little bit to make new friends and new friend groups, and kind of really forced me to rediscover, I think, myself and get comfortable talking to people and help break myself out of a shell. But as far as the upbringing in Northeast Ohio, I always say it was a good place to be from. I look forward going back to see my family. I know it gave me a really good base for the world and understanding and skill sets to move from.
And learning how to crack out of your shell, it's key to being a business person or to being able to talk about and sell your work. So that sounds like it was an important stage for you. Did you go directly to college after high school?
I did. I went to Kent State University, which is about 15, 20 minutes from where I grew up. And they had a really good architecture program at the time. And a family friend was really familiar with it and was a former professor there and had really turned me on to that. So I ended up going there. And that's where I met Jonathan, who I started Great Pants with.
How did you guys end up forming the company? Did you form it in Ohio, or did you end up moving to the Pacific Northwest right after college? How did all of that come about?
It all came about in a very random, serendipitous sort of way. So John and I were roommates in college, and we always worked on projects together and tinkered and teamed up on a bunch of different things. And we always toyed around with the idea of doing our own thing someday. And through college, we had internships in Cleveland working at different firms. And that's where I started to develop my love for furniture. That in high school, I think working in the shop class and just having an appreciation for craft. But I worked for this firm in Cleveland. And the reason I went there, the head partner at the time worked for Aero Saarinen until he had passed away. And we had original Saarinen pieces in the office and then also in his house. And he had original Reedvelt pieces. One of it was a chest that was one of four in the world. And I just really fell in love with design at that point in a different way. And I was at that firm until I graduated, and I stayed there. And Jonathan then moved out west, and I went to Washington, D.C. to open office with two other guys for the same firm. They were branching out. So I went east and he went west. And then since the internet and email and all those things were raging at that time, we still worked on competitions and projects together, kind of bi-coastal.
Mm-hmm. At what point was this? About what year?
This was after we graduated. So we graduated in 2004 and 2005. We got 2 degrees in architecture. And so this would have been in starting 2005.
Okay.
We just started kind of working on competitions and submitting things together and kind of playing around with ideas. And that's where the seeds of Gray Pants really started. It wasn't Gray Pants, but we didn't really know what it was or what it was called. But we were just really developing our collaboration together and friendship. And I was in D.C. for 2 years and then eventually moved out west. That's where things really started to take off for us.
So you're both kind of approaching all of this with architectural background. So that actually makes sense when you look at some of your pieces, especially the first pieces that you came out with. So I want to ask you about the name Gray Pants. Why the heck you made your company called Gray Pants when you don't make pants?
That's a great question. We felt our last names were really strange, Grizzle and Junker. And
seriously, you guys have the coolest names.
They're cool names, but from a marketing standpoint, I don't know that they really work.
No, exactly. And we were doing typical overthinking design, right? So we were like coming up with our own names or trying to make up our own stuff and just like way overthinking it. And a friend looked at us and goes, well, you guys used to wear the same damn pants. Why don't you call it Gray Pants? Because Jonathan and I had the same pair of gray pants in college. It was our nice pair of pants. And we wore them for our critiques and our first jobs because, you know, we poor college kids just had pants with holes in them. And these were the only ones that really didn't have holes in them. So they were our nice pair of pants. And it just kind of became a joke. And then that's how it all
That's so funny. Design Milk was also a joke when I started the name.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, who would ever name their company Design Milk if you were trying to create a company? It's kind of like one of those things where it's like silly and it's like an inside joke. And then all of a sudden it becomes a brand. But kudos to you for sticking with it.
It works.
Yeah, it does.
As long as it makes you smile, that's the thing. I think for us, at least every time we think about it or have to tell the story, I will admit I do smile and it, you know, I have fond memories.
Yeah.
So it's good.
What's the partnership dynamic like between you and Jonathan? Are you guys the same person or do you have different strengths and weaknesses that complement each other?
Yeah, we work really well together. I would say it's definitely more of a complementary skill set. I tend to be bigger, crazy, conceptual thinking, and Jonathan's more refined, detail-oriented. So together, blending those things together, things actually get done, which is nice. And we can also think big and think small at the same time. And start out with an idea that you don't really know where you're going to end up. And then we can kind of tailor and hone it down to make it something. So there's some sort of trajectory to go with it.
The first exposure I had of Gray Pants products was the Step Light, which is an aluminum light and it comes flat packed and it kind of accordions out into a pendant. Was that the first product that you released together as Gray Pants?
No, that was actually the second lighting series that we came up with was the Step Light. The first was the Scrap Lights, which were the recycled cardboard pendants.
Okay. With the recycled cardboard pieces, did you work with him on that when you were in different cities and that's something you kind of came up with? Or was that after you came out to meet him in the Pacific Northwest?
It was after I came out here. So I came out here in 07 and we again became roommates and we were living together and we were kind of bored with our day jobs. Architecture is a great profession, but we really wanted to use our hands again. We weren't really using our hands as much as we wanted to do. So we were sitting behind computer screens. So we were trying to figure a way to bridge the gap where you could do something with a computer, but then also bring it back to using your hands. And that's sort of how the lights came about. We entered a competition.
Can you describe the lights really quick for our listeners who may not have seen them?
We have a whole range of different sizes and pendants that are made from corrugated cardboard. And it started out as a dumpster diving project, pretty much just trying to find material that was being wasted and giving it a new life. And since our background was in architecture and the way our minds were working within models and the way how we could think about making something from a 2D surface into a 3D object was in layers and pieces and slices. So the series is really classic shapes, but then terraced or stacked corrugated cardboard. And we're using the corrugations as a means to play with the light and how the light interacts between the corrugations to develop like a light and shadow, and they give really unique patterns and breathe light in a different way on the walls and the different settings that they're in.
Yeah, they're these gorgeous volumes of stacked rings of cardboard with light on the inside. So the light comes through the corrugations and really casts light in the room in a really interesting way.
Yeah, and I think what I love the most about the cardboard lights is when you look at them, you're not quite sure what they're made out of. And in some way, you've been able to really elevate cardboard, which is a material that we all use for things like boxes. You know, you've created these really beautiful and interesting lamps that look so luxurious.
Yeah, part of the challenge was abstracting the material to the point where you didn't really recognize what it was prior. And that was one of the big hurdles initially moving forward with that as an idea, was that if people had the conception that cardboard was this kind of, you know, off the shelf, just cheap material, then it was elevating the idea of like what that was to a product. And it was more about craftsmanship and the elegance and taking it to the next level and taking it to the next thing.
So let's go back to that origin story where you said you were entering a competition.
There was a call in Seattle through an art gallery, and gallery is no longer in existence, but the call was for sustainable seating. And I think this was in 2007, later 2007. And Jonathan and I had wanted to enter to do something in there, to make something. And At the time, we thought, working at different architecture firms, that there was sustainable buzzwords being slapped around, like green and even sustainable and everything. Like, we were sending in presentations and people would just add that into conversation as if, you know, everything was that. And we were like, well, let's just challenge ourselves and like make a chair from trash. So we decided to look at what was around us or what we could get access to. And we ended up making a series of four chairs from waste materials that we collected. And one was old boxes. The other was Stranger Newspapers, which is a local newspaper in Seattle. The other was slip sheets that come in the freight containers into the port here. Then the other was scrap pieces of plywood that we got from local contractors. So we made a series of four chairs for this gallery exhibition, just all made from waste material. And the way that these chairs were being exhibited, the gallery space had really tall ceilings. So chairs looked like doll furniture as a setup. So when we walked in, we're like, oh, wow, we really need to do something to kind of lower the scale of the room to make the chairs a little bit more intimate. Mm-hmm. So we decided to make lights from the scraps of the chairs to hang above it. And those became scrap lights.
Oh, so that's a great story.
Yeah, they weren't even like the main object that you were creating for the competition. They were kind of the sidebar, and accidentally you've created your first product.
Yeah, they were an afterthought. And the first one was a present for my girlfriend at the time. I wanted to make her something. And then that's what we ended up using to hang above the chairs. But yeah, they were just an afterthought. What happened was people were looking at the lights and didn't look at the chairs. So, which is fine. It worked out.
That's focus testing. You got your customer feedback right there.
Exactly.
I want to hear a little bit more about how the business started. So you had all these people looking at the lights. And did you and Jonathan just look at each other and be like, okay, we've got to roll with these?
No, we actually got pushed into it because afterwards we were still really excited about the chairs, but we had these lights as well. So we decided to submit both of them to, there was a contemporary design fair in Phoenix. So we submitted the chairs and we submitted the lights. And then there was another competition through Design Within Reach that we submitted both. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, man, the chairs are going to be great. People are going to love this. And then the lights ended up getting selected as finalists in both of those competitions. And then after that, a friend of ours who became sort of a business mentor was like, you guys really need to do something with this. So he just kept pushing us to develop and take it on as a thing. So we started to do that on the side from our day jobs.
Was that in 2008?
That would have been in 2008. We officially, on paper, started Gray Pants in January 1st of 2008. And while we were both working architecture firms, we would work during the day and then come home at night and also work.
Tell me a little bit more about this friend who is also a business mentor. That sounds like kind of a critical role to play in the inception of this.
Again, it was just serendipity. And I guess we create our own serendipity in the end.
Oh, I like that. We do.
We do. I had a joke with one of my friends that I would say serendipity's not in the bottom of a bag of Cheetos. So you just can't sit around and like eat a whole bag of junk food and expect things to come to you. You have to like get out and create your own opportunities. It was just through meeting people and friends that was an older gentleman who had knew more about business. And John and I have design backgrounds. We don't have business backgrounds. We knew nothing about business. And he and a friend of his kind of took us under the wing and really mentored us through the early process of starting a business because we had no clue. We had no clue how to do any of the paperwork or any of the taxes or any of that kind of stuff. So they really, really were critical. And they were also just really great as a sounding board and really positive people to keep pushing us forward because it's so tough to start something. You just keep getting knocked down and you just got to keep getting back up. So their encouragement really helped us to go forward.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Support for Clever comes from Wix Studio. Instead of reading you another, let's be honest, boring ad script, Wix Studio just sent me this wild-looking Alice in Wonderland-themed website to scroll through and tell you about. So, whoa. This is not the web I'm used to. There's something called mouse parallax, which makes it feel like you can go deeper into the screen. And as I scroll down, it's like I'm falling down the rabbit hole. And things are moving in depth and perspective. Even my cursor has morphed into a glowing little orb. There are all these no-code animations that make this place feel organic and alive. And Alice is wearing some pretty cool shoes, by the way. Okay, I know I'm mixing up my narratives now, but we are definitely not in Kansas anymore. Your turn to go down the rabbit hole. Build your next web project on Wix Studio, the platform for agencies and enterprises.
In 2008, you are on the books as Gray Pants as a company, but since then you have done so much. Your business has exploded. You did a video with BMW. You've had a feature in Dwell Magazine, among other features all over the place. And you also do lots of lamps for hospitality and also in Starbucks. So do you feel personally like you've made it as a designer in your career?
No. I don't ever want to feel like I made it, I think.
You're not resting on your laurels at this point.
No, definitely not. It's fun to think about at times. You know, success is it's a funny thing. I don't feel like we've really made it. You know, there's so much more that we want to do. There's so much more that we want to get out. There's, you know, so many more ideas that we're excited to put out there and push forward that I don't really want to rest around it. So it kind of makes me excited to keep working on stuff, I guess.
At what point did your company get big enough to open a studio in Amsterdam? Because you guys are international.
Yeah, we're lucky. Again, we're really fortunate. But how it all worked out. So after 2008, I still had a day job for about a year and a half. And then Jonathan had one for about a year plus after that as well. So it just became this kind of like slow bootstrapped process for us to develop Gray Pants. And we got really fortunate early on with great interns, and people just kept showing up to help us on projects. And how the whole Amsterdam piece started was, I guess it's 4 years ago now. Well, we've been going to ICFF, which is the International Contemporary Furniture Fair in the States, which is, I think, the largest design show in the States.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really kind of springboarded and launched us several years ago.
Yeah, I remember when you guys showed there, the first year you showed there, I was like, whoa, who are these guys? A new player on the field. This is cool.
It was a last minute thing. Yeah, it all happened pretty much a month before the show. I begged my parents just for a little bit of money to show up and go there. And we didn't even know where we were going to stay when we showed up. Just all, it was kind of a wild story. And it just all ended up working out. And that's what's really helped launch us. But then a couple years later at the same show, we ended up meeting two Dutch guys that were just really great people and sort of approached us, and they wanted to do more distribution for us through the Benelux region in Europe. We thought it was more beneficial to really explore the idea of setting up another office and production for a different region using local materials over there. It's a satellite to Gray Pants, but it's more sales, marketing, distribution for our products in Europe and pretty much the rest of the world.
I want to talk a little bit about your creative process. What does the ideation process look like at Gray Pants? What does it usually start with?
Nature is an inspiration source for us. And for me, growing up in Ohio, and Jonathan grew up in Ohio as well, so we didn't have mountains and water, really. So when we came out here to Seattle, we just kind of were blown away by the natural beauty that's here. And it's been, nature's always just been a huge inspirational source, I think, for us, at least to spark our minds.
And how do you translate that into ideas and product?
That's, I don't know, magic, a lot of magic. We just like to tinker and like throw things at a wall and see what sticks. And the interesting thing for us, you know, we have three different areas or sandboxes we say that we play in. And one of them is the product side, and it's definitely developed more into the lighting world. And we do custom installations now out of our Seattle studio. So we design installations for...
Oh, you did the cloud at Airbnb.
We did. We did that. And we've done some things at Nordstrom's here.
Just for our listeners really fast, the Airbnb headquarters is in San Francisco, and Gray Pants did a custom light installation, which is a giant cloud, glowing cloud of ping pong balls, right? How many thousands of ping pong balls did you use?
About 30,000.
Okay. I spent a lot of time in San Francisco, so I've seen that in person. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to see it. But yeah, we do a lot of custom installations now, and then we still do architecture, but we treat architecture as art. We really love flirting on the boundary of art and design, and architecture is our excuse to be artists again. And the way John and I were practicing architecture before and the different firms we were at and how we were in the profession, we decided that once we got out, if we were going to do it, that's sort of the way we want to treat it. It's a really long process, and we think the process should be a beautiful process, and it takes years to flesh out these ideas. And if we were going to go do it, we really wanted to do it in this beautiful artistic way and have buildings be lanterns, have buildings be sculpture, have buildings really transform people's lives. So that's how we started to approach that.
Do you have to work around trying not to be known as the cardboard light guys?
That was a concern for us, for sure.
Yeah.
And we definitely didn't want to be known as just, yeah, the cardboard guys. We really love that material. We love what it's done for us, but we don't want it to be the only thing that we do. So we've been, you know, working really hard to develop other things outside of the cardboard realm, but also still experimenting with it, because at this point we're pretty good at it. We have a lot of different expertise with it that we can really explore and push too.
You just mentioned wanting to transform the landscape, like be a lantern within the landscape. And I've seen, not in person, but images of this recent architectural work you did called The Garage, which is very much a glowing lantern within the landscape. Was that a commission? What was the reason for that project?
It was. It was a commission. So we were commissioned by a couple in Seattle to do that. They approached us.
Okay.
It's really beautiful. We'll put some pictures up on our website in the show notes for this episode so people can take a look at it. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, the Pacific Northwest is like blowing up, and I'm going to wait till the train goes by.
Yeah, we're in the industrial area. We're sandwiched between a rail line and like a truck transfer station. So.
Oh, nice. I love those areas. That sounds so romantic.
Feels
to
so
me.
Industrial.
The building that we're at was 1906, and they used to build ships inside of it. These really tall, huge sawtooth roof, huge wooden timber frame. It's really charming.
Oh, wow.
So what I wanted to ask you is the Pacific Northwest is like blowing up in terms of the design scene. There's lots of great stuff coming out of all the cities up there. What is the Seattle art and design community like? Because as an outsider, it feels very collaborative. Is that your experience?
The thing about the Northwest that I appreciate and learned is that it's very opening and welcoming. So I think that transcends into the design community and the art community as well. The city itself is just growing like crazy. So I think naturally everything grows with it.
What industries are growing in the city? Is tech moving in?
Tech is huge. So big. It's San Francisco 2.0.
Yeah.
That's huge. Basically every major tech firm is opening an office here or a campus. And it's this transition of moving back to downtown, and Amazon really kind of pioneered it and started it. So instead of, you know, doing the satellite campus idea, it's basically doing an urban campus. So within the city.
Oh, that's really interesting.
The one thing about Seattle is it's so much natural beauty even around the city. I mean, you're looking at two mountain ranges. You're surrounded by water. It's really picturesque. So it's a really desirable place to be from that perspective.
So who else is doing really cool stuff up there that you really like?
Well, we work a lot with Urban Case. So Darren Montgomery of Urban Case, he works within our studio, and we just partnered with him on a shop space.
Let's talk about the showroom space. When did that open? Was that last year?
Let's see. We've been in this space now for 5 years. We moved from Capitol Hill down to Soto, and we just expanded the studio 3 years ago. More space became available down where we're at. So we treat half of the space as kind of more dirty hands-on, working on custom projects. Then the other half is office and showroom. And we've been building it out for the past 2 to 3 years now. And so we've been transforming it that way. And it's still a work in process. Always your own projects are the ones that come last. So some are 90% done, some are 50% done. It's still a work in work in process.
Is it more of a by appointment showroom or is it a retail space?
It's kind of appointment only, but people come down all the time. We'll pop in. We get a lot of student tours coming through as well, different universities. We try to host a lot of the architecture and design community as well for happy hours down here. So we like to bring people down. It's just a really beautiful space to be in. So we try to open it up as much as we can and have people come in throughout the day if they want to just kind of chill.
So let's shift gears a little bit and talk more about Seth Grizzle, the person. We know you're a designer and an architect and that you make awesome stuff for a living. But what do you really do to refuel your personal tank? Like, do you still play basketball? Do you have a hobby on the side? Do you have a personal life with children? What fuels you?
John is a new father, so he I think that's definitely keeping him occupied. He has a little girl that was born in November.
Oh, who's adorable. Congratulations.
I do not. I have a dog, and he's awesome. His name is Fig.
All
he's
right.
He's a labradoodle. Yeah, he's a goofy guy. He's
hypoallergenic.
Yeah, exactly, right? That's great.
Oh, Fig. We want a picture.
Yeah.
I can send one. He's adorable. Yeah, he's my buddy. I play with him, go to the dog park. Definitely have to, you know, get my exercise. That's good. But I don't do it through basketball anymore. In the summer, when the weather gets nice, I hop outside. I love to go hiking, be in the mountains, get as high up as I can in the mountains is my preference, at least.
For perspective or just for the oxygen deprivation?
The challenge and the views. And I'm just fascinated with mountains since I grew up in an area that was really flat. They kind of blow my mind.
They make you feel small in a good way.
They do. They definitely do. They put things into perspective. And Mount Rainier is kind of the backdrop for the city, depending on the angle. And it just dwarfs the city. It makes the city look so small. And it's just this huge thing in the background. So it just kind of like, it's awe-inspiring for me. And I live on a boat. So
live on a boat?
I do. I live on a boat.
Whoa.
So I live on a old wooden boat that was built in 1964 in Chicago, of all things. It was a custom one boat that was built for a family out here, and it's just been out in the Northwest since, and I just kind of stumbled on it and decided that would be a fun way to live. So I moved on a boat 3 years ago, and I try to get on the water as much as I can too in the summer.
Oh, that seems like it's so cool.
It's a lifestyle change. It's not for everyone.
I'm sure.
But it's a great challenge. I like to think of living space as a challenge or as an experience.
Yeah.
And I took it on as that, and you really don't need a lot in life. And it's just really taught me more about simplicity, and the things that you own and the things that you have should be really special objects and really beautiful things. And that's even how we approach our work. I think good design makes good stories. You really start to notice that when you have to curate your space and what you buy and what you choose to put in it. And especially if you don't have a lot of space, everything becomes important. So it's really taught me a lot about that.
Does Fig like living on a boat?
That's all he knows. So,
okay.
Yeah, since he was 8 weeks old, at least. I think he does. I would say so.
We'll have to get a consortium of labradoodles together to figure out whether he's privately complaining.
Exactly.
Okay, so if you had an alter ego, what would you be doing if you weren't a designer or architect? If you had to be something else, what would it be?
A rock star sounds nice, but that means I would have to play an instrument or sing, which I don't do. So
you don't sing either?
The shower, I guess. You know.
Yeah. What do you sing in the shower?
And probably Billy Joel, maybe. It depends what's.
Okay, you're a crooner.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I grew up. That was my first cassette I ever bought. Was Billy Joel Greatest Hits, Volume 1 and 2. I was a weird kid, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm still a weird kid. I own it.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of weird kids turn into really great designers and architects and artists, so that's totally fine.
Celebrate the weirdness.
I want to know, since you have a studio in Amsterdam, I'm sure you've traveled there, but I want to know, what's been your favorite country to visit, and what was the last trip you went on?
We get over to Amsterdam probably anywhere between 3 to 4 times a year or more.
Oh, you're like a local. That's a lot.
When you have a business to run, you have to be present, apparently. So we have to show up every now and then. it's great, but I really do love Holland. You know, the more time I spend in a place, the more I love a place. So you know, I really love Seattle. I really love Amsterdam. It's the two cities I probably spend the most time now by far, but I really love Holland, and I love the way that they approach life. They're a really small country, and what it allowed them to do and think is that they don't have very many natural resources, but they value people and they treat people as a natural resource and is their most prized resource. So they really invest in their people, and everybody has value, and it's just a really beautiful way to look at life. And I think we sort of take that for granted, at least here in the States. So it's taught me, and I knew this growing up, but everybody is valuable, and it's a great reminder, and it's great to see that put into practice.
It's important, I think, also to teach the youth to invest in humanity, right?
Exactly.
Speaking of that, I have a question. I want to know if your parents are proud of you.
I hope so. I know my mom definitely is, because she likes everything on Facebook that we post. So.
Oh, bless moms. They're so good for that.
Yeah, I would say they are. They're great people. I definitely think so.
That's awesome. What's coming up for Gray Pants?
Tons of stuff. Yeah, we have some small architecture projects that we're working on. We're always busy with custom installations. We're doing tons of those now, which is great. And we're diversifying our product line as well. We just launched at Light and Building our entire scrap light series with white cardboard, which may sound really easy and kind of trivial, but it took us 7 years to figure it out. We've been trying to figure out that process for a long time, and we actually ended up having to like reinvent how we did everything. So we're really, really happy about that.
Can you describe a little bit about what the biggest hurdle was? It does seem like that wouldn't be that difficult. What's the difference?
Sourcing the material and getting the right quality and getting the right precision that you needed. You know, our original series was all laser cut, and we just couldn't use lasers anymore. It just took that long to figure it all out.
Did lasers discolor the edge?
Yeah, it burns okay. The material.
Yeah.
So we have that in the pipeline. We have new lighting series that we've been working on that's going to come out this year. We've also developed a ceiling system. So we have a ceiling system that we've designed that deals with lighting, acoustics, air distribution, fire suppression, full-blown like kit of parts for workplace pretty much. And we've partnered with Urban Case, and we've been working with them on workstations, doing a lot more workplace design.
Oh, wow.
Finding opportunities to elevate that experience for people that can enjoy design in a different way. You don't have to sit in a steel box. Your workplace can be just as beautiful as the things that you have in your home.
Yeah, and that's a pretty exciting area of design right now, because workplace is changing so much, or at least a lot of people are really putting a lot of energy into thinking about what the workplace of the future is. So
exactly.
What's the big picture? What's the end game? What's the long-term goal for Seth and Gray Pants?
I don't know that we have an end game. The end game is to keep making beautiful things. Let the beauty we love be what we do. And that's how we wake up in the morning. That's how we go to bed at night. We believe in design. We believe that design should be accessible to people. And that's why we do what we do. So as Gray Pants in the future, I think we're going to keep innovating and developing a lot within the lighting world, pushing that forward, as well as really flirting on that boundary of art and design. It's a really interesting space for us. I like to say that we are kind of a weird brainchild of the Eames and Dr. Seuss. If they got together and had a kid, that's what we would be. So that's kind of how I sort of describe us. So I think it's keep evolving that. And then also just remembering to have fun what we do, because that's why we're doing it.
Well, where do you want our listeners to go find you? Website, social media, give us all those details.
Yeah, so graypants.com is our website. Check us out there. Look at our work. We say that's the best way to see an active live portfolio of what we do. And you'll learn there's much more than cardboard on there as well. And social media, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram.
Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thanks so much, Seth.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
What a charming young gent.
Yeah, he was really great to talk to. And who knew he lived on a boat? That's so cool.
I know. I think that's one of my favorite things about doing this podcast is having license to kind of pry into their personal world. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad we found out that he lives on a boat, because then we got that whole story out of him about how he feels about objects and how they're so important and how you should surround yourself with stuff that's meaningful, which you definitely want the designers of the world with an attitude like that. You don't want them thinking that the stuff that you surround yourself with...
Right, that they're like just collecting junk.
Right. Or that it's disposable or not mm-hmm. meaningful and that it's ephemera, right? Because ephemera is one thing, but when you're designing, it's got to have a core of meaning or else it's trash.
Right. And I love that they actually make product out of cardboard, which you would think some people think of it as trash or just for the recycling or whatever, but they've made these beautiful lights out of a material that you would never expect. And it doesn't even look like cardboard. And they've given meaning and life to something that we sometimes consider disposable. So there's a parallel there.
And what I love about these luxurious objects that are made out of cardboard is they remind you to look around at your entire world and reevaluate everything you see.
There's so much possibility in materials and things that we use every day.
There's possibility, there's beauty, and, you know, if somebody puts a little heart and energy into it, it could become a glorious, sculptural, transformative piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, Seth Grizzle. Yay, Gray Pants.
Totally.
Thank you for listening. We have been so grateful for all the overwhelming support and great feedback we've gotten this past year. If you enjoy Clever and want more, please subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Sign up for our newsletter, read the show notes, and see images of Seth's work at cleverpodcast.com. And connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Clever Podcast.
Also, we want to send a special shout out and thank you to all of our generous sponsors who helped support episodes this year, and also to those of you who have donated through our PayPal button on our website. We are very, very grateful for your generosity, and it helps us keep Clever going. So happy new year to all of you, and we can't wait for you to hear who we're talking to in 2017.
This episode of Clever was edited by Chris Modell of Your Studio with music by L1011. Happy New Year, everybody!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.